Live from the Atomic Clock at the NIST facility in Boulder, Colorado, and brought to you by Barks Root Beer. Barks has bite. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2 Talk.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. WKRP. Got tired of packing and unpacking. Town to town, up and down the dial. Maybe you and me were never meant to be. Just maybe think of me once in a while. I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
Today is January 1st. 2011, and we are recording episode number 14, Allie, and we still don't have theme music. Why is this now?
Well, you know what? I was popping the cork on the champagne to celebrate the fact that the Alligators beat the Hammerheads in our fantasy football league, Del.
Really? That's still going on?
Well, it's over now, but I beat you.
Was that in the championship game?
No, it was in the consolation game.
Oh. I guess that shows how much I've been paying attention to it.
I think I made it to 8th place, and you made it to 9th or 10th. There's only 12.
Oh, okay. I guess it's not impressive when you're 9th or 10th out of 12.
And the 12th was really just a bot.
Oh, well, at least they beat the bot, right?
No, well, yeah, you beat the bot.
Sounds like my healing parse.
So, Del, we have news about the EQ2 Talk Mighty Mug Auction. The auction has come to a close, and we have the winners to announce, don't we?
The Alicious mug that I made goes to KG from the Unrest server.
And the winner of the Delmon mug made by Allie is actually Anonymous.
I hope Anonymous doesn't burn me in effigy.
I do too, because I worked really hard on it.
So we do want to say thank you to all the community sites who helped us promote this project.
Yeah, we wanted to thank Domino for posting an entry about us on her personal blog. We wanted to also thank Calphine over at Zam, Ashlane, Brass, and the whole crew at the official SOE podcast, and Amneris for including us on the write-up about the community holiday events on the EverQuest 2 site.
And a quick thank you to all the folks who sent us tells and messages on Facebook saying that they came out really good. We certainly had a fun time doing it. And I'm not sure what we're going to do for our 2011 charity drive. Maybe the mugs will be back. Maybe there'll be something different. But we're going to certainly look forward to that. And we do thank everybody for their support in this labor of love that we worked so very hard on.
Maybe we can do plushies next year.
Oh, that sounds like sewing.
It does, doesn't it?
A needle pulling thread.
So, Del, what have you been up to since the last show?
Not too much, really. Finished up a lot of the Frostfell quests, did the new one this year, which was kind of interesting. It was a little bit of a walkthrough of the previous ones where you kind of had to click an item. The reward was relatively nice. So I did a lot of that in the season. I have to say I did not go to Santa Glug every day. For some reason, I felt like I have enough house items already. And I also took advantage of the double XP or bonus XP that we were given by Sony. Spent some time leveling the Evil Monk or the Bruiser. And I got about 10 levels on him, both in trade skilling. Chose my trade skilling, of course. He'll be a tailor going forward. And got him up into the 40s or so in adventure level. So I'm hanging out in Seamfont killing lots of kobolds.
Nice. What level trade skilling are you?
I'm just below the 40s. I want to say it's mid to high 30s. I was really going through it so fast with the vitality, with the bonus, and the bonus also that we get for having other max level trade skillers, just making all the items from each level and the, if you want to call it the discovery XP that you get for making your first of an item.
Right, I was first leveling, time combined.
Right. I was just leveling on those combines alone. So I was going through raws as fast as I could buy them off the broker. And they were getting quite expensive towards the end there. He's probably in the mid-30s or so, mid to high 30s or so Again, I was just going so fast, I was losing track of where I was.
Wow, that's good. You took advantage of the XP bonus. I did not at all take advantage of the XP bonus, which normally I do, and I really should have because I still have trade skillers that need work. But, you know, we're coming down to the wire here on the expansion, and I really am still working on my quest count, trying to pass that 5,000 mark to get the EverQuester title, which it's not actually a title, the achievement. I was really hoping for a title, but I've been, you know, sort of pulling out all the stops to get, you know, get my quest count up. There have been some items on my list for a long time that required some time camping, those sort of rare quest starters, and ended up getting three in just a matter of a couple of trips out. And I think this actually solidifies my theory about chronometering, because each time I've gotten those rare quest starters, I've been chronometered to the appropriate level for the mobs that drop them, as opposed to, you know, having them be gray and literally spending, I don't even know how many hours. I did used to have a little checkmark thing going for how many mobs I killed or how many encounters did not drop a particular quest starter. And then I finally got it on one trip out when I was chronometered.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree on the chronometering theory. I think it was a little bit more of a Frostfell miracle for you.
You believe in Frostfell miracles more than you believe in chronometering, my chronometering theory.
Yes, I would
say
actually
makes
a
lot more like sense than a miracle.
I don't know. It's very hard to tell. I mean, we've gone back and forth on this.
Okay.
In the past, correct? About
yes, we have, and you always disagree with me.
This is true, and then sometimes I'm right. Okay, I'm never right.
Well, we never know the answer. We don't know the answer.
Right. I've seen quest starters that drop when you're not chronometered and you're level 90 right now and you get it off of gray. But then we do know there are specific ones, like in Clefts of Rujak, that only came when we chronometered, so...
Right, but here's my thing. My theory doesn't preclude the possibility of a quest starter dropping from a gray mob. My theory is that chronometering simply increases your chances.
I will say...
My theory, I have no proof of this, but I have anecdotal evidence, and I'm going to stick to my theory.
And my anecdotal evidence is that it was Frostfell, and in the spirit of good EQing and peace and will and harmony to even those people in Freeport, it was a Frostfell miracle.
Okay.
We did have some emails, did we not?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Perhaps we can find some more things to disagree about.
Well, no, I think we both agree that we do have email to read.
Okay, never mind. Yes, we got another lovely letter from Indebuff, a regular listener. Hello again. Just listened to your latest show, and you brought up a couple of subjects that are key in this game, I think. The first being guild halls. Now, I'm just 1 year into the game, so I don't know what it was like when they did not exist, or when they did not have all the amenities they do now. I can say, though, how it looked when I first started playing this game. Let me start by saying that I started playing EQ2 really because I just could not continue to play WoW, as it had become very old and repetitious. I knew this game was 6 years old, and then it would be suffering the effects of age, as all games. So the empty towns didn't really affect me all that much, as I saw the game mainly as a stopgap till I found something else. Of course, after playing the game, well, that's all changed. I hope to squeeze all the play I can get from it. Now, those empty streets, though, can be a huge issue to someone deciding to invest their playtime here. It's not just knowing the people are out there that's important. It's very important as well to enter a main city and see other people, even if it's just to see what people are wearing or what mounts they have. The appearance of life needs to be there. Coming into a game the first time and seeing empty streets in a main city can end up with someone moving on without giving the game a chance. Now, I know this has been talked about in forums and that there are some plans in the works to try to get people back in towns again, so I guess we'll see what happens there. Never discount, though, how much appearance of life means in an MMO. Okay, now on to the content issue. This is a tough one, and one I wish people would give more thought to before complaining in forums about. Just once, put yourself in SOE's place. They need to provide content that will cover a wide range of interests with this game, unlike WoW, where it really is just about gear, raid, kill stuff. This game has a rich crafting aspect, as well as a large group of players that focus on just decorating. For some, yes, they enjoy or only have time for solo play, or find questing more enjoyable than raiding. I myself am an altaholic. I love the act of leveling and seeing how each class differs. Then there are the raiders and end content players. I'm sure I'm leaving some out here, but I think that would be the main ones. Now, I know you two claim to not be hardcore raiders, but you are raiders. You've done all the holidays, aside from maybe hitting the new stuff, it's old content to you. I'm sure there are a few shiny collections, heritage quests, etc., that you've not done already, so outside of filling in on some achievements, this game has become endgame for you. In order for SOE to give you enough to do to keep you busy for a year, and also give content to others' playstyle, they would have to really create a whole new game each year. Gear has so much to do with these games, and when you're in raid gear, as opposed to, say, instance gear or mastercrafted, the mobs outside of raid zones will not really hurt you, and will easily fall at your feet. Raid gear is intended for raiding, period. You will be overpowered elsewhere in the game. All games I've seen have this same dynamic. You raid to get better gear, so you can then raid the next hardest thing, so on and so forth. They can't possibly give you mobs that wander the world that are a danger to you as raiders, as that would mean the non-raider would not stand a chance. Some people play these games and never raid. Either they don't have the time, interest, or, like me, see it as the shortcut to the endgame cycle. And also, this game offers so much more than just raiding. It's a hard fact that this game has been around a while. It's really no different from that other game, WoW. They have the same high-end geared complaining that content is too easy, that there's never enough, and so forth. Games become top-heavy over time, but just because they are, they can't cater only to the top. Delmon may think Extended is the offspring of the devil, but I would guess it is helping keep this game afloat, and judging by what I have been reading in forums, is doing well at bringing in money. Do I think keeping it separate from Live was a good thing? Probably not for the Live servers, but from what I gather, most from Live wanted nothing to do with any of it. Well, at least not until they went forward and cut Live players off. Trust me, there's a lot on Extended you can't buy here. Some I don't understand that are on Extended that are not here, as they are purely fluff items, but I guess they try and add it slower here than there. As much as people love to complain to SOE about this or that, I really think they do a heck of a job at trying to please their customer base. Many other companies out there, you get what you get, like it or not, and they don't really care to hear what you say. That is not the case here. I've seen the devs respond, interact, and even listen at times to what people want. They will never please everyone, nor should they try. Their aim should be to make money. Money keeps this game going. You care about this game, support it. Buy some fluff, or even give some fluff to a friend as a gift. You'll make someone happy, and you will be supporting the game that you've chosen to play. On a last note, I think maybe as a New Year's goal this year, it would be a step in the right direction if we all could find a way to say what we feel in forums with some class. If you think SOE has done damage to this game by not advertising, or by this content or that, people do far more damage by constantly berating SOE every time you're unhappy about something. Like I stated before, there's constructive and destructive feedback. Destructive feedback only hurts the game in so many ways. Okay, got in my soapbox again, sorry. But I really do love this game and want a chance to play it for a long time. Well, it's a bit late, but my Frostfell wish... Being able to turn house items in any direction. And, well, pretty much any items in-game that are not already a house item become one. Especially the Maj dual tiles and items there. I wish everyone a very happy holiday season and hope that we will all be around in-game next year to wish for all the stuff we didn't get this year. Signed, Indabuff.
That certainly was a lengthy email, and thank you, Indabuff, for taking time to write to us. You covered a lot of topics there. I will pick on one point. I'm not sure if I truly said that Extended is the spawn of Satan. It's not my play style, and I do agree that it should have stayed where it is, over there, whatever that might be, as long as long as EQ2 Extended and what it is and how it operates stays in its own play environment and doesn't affect my play environment, where in my world, we have to earn what we have. And the gear and the items that you have worked hard to get and are proud to have them. I think that when you can purchase them for real money, it kind of cheapens the accomplishment. And that's why I think they should stay separate, because I like the fact that I've worked hard to have what I have, and I want to be proud of it. And I want to be proud of the people who are around me, too, who have worked hard to have what they have and can show it off that way. As opposed to necessarily saying, well, gee, that guy kind of bought all that armor and bought all those weapons. He didn't really work on it. Maybe he doesn't understand the game to the depth and the complexity that I do, because I had to work hard at those encounters and understand those encounters to be able to win at them. He was able just to go in and purchase them with a credit card. So I do believe that it's good that Extended and the live servers stay separate. And that was something I had put on my Frostfell wish list last show, that they continue to do that.
I would agree with that, basically. I actually, this email, Indabuff, I think, is our, she keeps us in line and is sort of like the voice of reason, I think. And I've actually heard from other people who have said, you know, you should get Indabuff on the show because she makes more sense than you do. So, I, as usual, reading her emails, it's like, it's difficult sometimes because she's disagreeing with some of the things that we say, but it makes sense what she's saying. Like, for example, you know, she's 100% right about they can't please everybody. She's 100% right that we can't have a dangerous world to, you know, if you're wearing endgame gear, if it's dangerous to us, then it's basically unplayable for other people. And that's a totally fair statement. And I have to agree with that. But it's not going to eliminate the wish that it was more dangerous for me. Well, I'm going to keep wishing that. And I keep putting myself in dangerous positions and dying. I, in fact, just died yesterday to a Drake in Sundered Frontier. Sundered Frontier. Because I thought, I could take this out. It's in my way. It killed me.
There's a difference, though, between the world being a dangerous place and a fatal place. There was a quest a long time ago, one of the trade skill quests that I did, where you have to, I think, run around in some of the ROK zones. And my adventure skill was 10 or 11, but I had a 80-level trade skiller. Certainly anything he bumped into was going to kill him on sight was going to do just that in one single hit. Was I able to complete that quest? Yes. Did it take me a bit of work to figure out, okay, I can run to that tree, and then I can move diagonally this way and zigzag back that way and get around that mob? Yeah, so it took me a little bit of time and a little bit of effort, and I was very proud of that accomplishment that I worked to figure that out. So the world can be a dangerous place without it being a fatal place. And I think that's what you're asking for, Allie, a little bit. A little bit more danger, but not epics walking everywhere.
Right. I'm certainly not asking for epics to be walking everywhere. But I don't really even feel a sense of danger, really, on alts necessarily either. But, you know, again, you know, I still wish for danger. I do get what she's saying, and she is right. She is right, and they are doing a pretty good job, I think, of balancing the needs of different play styles. It's a really hard thing. I mean, when they first launched this game, they said it will be playable and desirable for both, you know, the casual and the hardcore player. And I sort of was like, well, how are you going to do that? But I think they've done a pretty good job, actually. Now, everybody can't be super happy all the time, but I think we can keep wishing for things, even if they're unrealistic. But she does bring up another good point. I mean, she had emailed us in the past about feedback, constructive and destructive criticism. I think you're always going to get people in the forums who are rude. And I think that SOE has learned to sort of filter out, you know, people who are just causing trouble.
Yes, I think you're right there. There's always going to be the jerkies from the internet who hide behind their anonymity because they can. And I think in this type of environment, you kind of have to have a little bit of a thick skin and the ability to tune those out and try to get to the real meat and the good stuff that's out there to figure out where to go. So I think they have done a good job of that. Unfortunately, there are jerkies. There's no other word for it. They're out there. And forums bring them out because they can hide behind some nickname on the screen, and it's not like you have that challenge of speaking face-to-face with somebody.
Right, and you're not necessarily talking to one particular person who you've met and whose name you know. You're just talking.
You're talking to the faceless body that is a corporation.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's real people who read those on the back end of that corporation. And I think that's what sometimes people forget a little bit.
Yes, I would agree with that. What did you think of the idea of her Frostfall wish to turn house items into any decoration and pretty much any items in the game that are not house items, being able to make those a house item?
Well, I'm not the biggest fan of house decorating. I think I've said that. It's a very nice wish. It's not something I would wish for, but I'm not going to poo-poo on somebody else's wish.
I think it's a cool idea.
I knew you would.
I think it's cool. I think that's a really cool idea. I just think that as far as processing goes, I don't know if it would be doable, but I think that's really a cool idea. Because there's some gear out there and some weapons and items that are in the artwork of zones that, you know, I've seen, oh, wow, that would be so cool in my house. But it's not out there. But, you know, maybe they're holding out for giving us stuff later.
Yeah, that's a touchy one, though. I would think, though, I think I do like a little bit of the fact that not everything is player makeable or player usable, because it does give the heroic zones, the instant zones, the overland zones, a bit of unique feel to them. So if everybody had access to every item out there, I think some of the zones might lose their uniqueness and their draw of I want to go there to see what it looks like. Well, I've already seen that everywhere else, and sometimes it's overused. I think sometimes when we see things that are like that, they tend to get overused. I think of aquariums in houses and guild halls. The first time I ever saw an aquarium, I was like, wow, that's really cool. Well, the next thing you know, everybody's house and everybody's guild hall seems to have an aquarium. It's like, ho-hum, aquarium. It's like standard feed for every house or every guild hall. And it lost its cachet, its uniqueness, when everybody has one. So same thing with in-game items that the devs are using to build the zones and the artwork with. Well, if we had them all, well, then I might not be so thrilled when I see them because I'm like, oh, ho-hum. That, again, everybody's got that, you know?
Okay, maybe you're just jaded and grouchy.
I'm not going to poo-poo on her wish.
You're a curmudgeon.
Pardon my pun, it's not up my alley.
Is that a pun?
Perhaps a bad one.
Okay.
Maybe we should move on to the next email.
Let's do that.
All right. The next email we had was from Sprouts, and Sprouts talks a little bit about a discussion we had in our last podcast. So Sprouts says, long time no talk. It's your favorite freeloader, Sprouts. I mean Freeporter. I've been rather busy lately and haven't had a chance to chime in, although I have been listening. I thought I'd toss in my individual perspective on the Guildhall versus City discussion, as I have had a good view from the other side of the fence. In my days of playing Ultima Online, I had a relatively successful guild for about a year or so. Turnover is a B. Anyway, back to my point. In UO, guild halls, no matter how nice you made them, are really used as much as a city. We had a very nice guild hall, and it had pretty much everything. Crafting, armory, training areas, a library with recall books, and supplies, and so on and so on. Even with all this, you needed the NPCs from the town. So in turn, the guild hall really served only as a meeting point. The downfall to this is everyone congregated in one city for the most part. Basically, it was because it was the most efficient city for accessing all of the vendors without having to move more than a few steps, thus not really making it a social event or giving off the feel of an alive city because everyone was just crammed into one little area and all of the other cities went empty. I like guild halls being the center instead of the cities, and there are ways to get people into town. SOE, or player-made festivals, and quest lines are two ways. Guild leaders put a lot of time into building their guild halls. The reward for that is seeing people use it. I think my characters would rather hang out amongst friends in a comfortable environment rather than schlepping around street corners or being crammed into the most efficient crafting area. Long story short, be careful what you wish for. It might not turn out exactly how you pictured it. Thank you for supplying a great podcast, good hunting, sprouts, and all of the alts associated and or in conjunction with sprouts.
Well, I like this email. I always like hearing from people. Sprouts gives us the EQ2X perspective. And in this email tells us a little bit about his experience in another game with population. And I agree, be careful what you wish for. Because I think when they first brought in guild halls, people were sort of fearing this outcome. And I think this little statement here that he makes, there are ways to get people back into the towns. Quest lines is one of the things that he says. But I think that's one of the big ways you can get people into the towns. But it's got to be for more than just a quick update. It's got to be, I think, for more than just a breeze through. To have sort of a place where people congregate. And I'm not really sure how to accomplish that if you don't take things out of the guild halls.
This is one of those things that I think goes back and forth. Having people in towns is nice because you see them, you get that, as I said in the last episode, that warm and fuzzy that they're around. But the guild halls have kind of become towns to themselves because they have all the amenities and all the things that somebody might need. But it lets players be devs themselves. Every guild hall is built around that guild's function and the way they like things to look and how they want it to feel. And if they want to cram all those amenities into one corner for most efficiency, absolutely they can do that. Or they can put all their crafting stuff in one particular area where their players, who kind of have common interests and common beliefs, where it works for them. So we're building, and I'm using air quotes, cities that meet our individual needs or our close friends' individual needs, as opposed to where the devs think the broker should be and the banker should be. For example, in Kinos Harbor, if you take that zone as an example, the broker and the banker are on opposite ends of the zone from each other. Well, in every guild hall I've practically been in and seen, they're right next to each other because people use those two very frequently. So we've played armchair dev a little bit in designing the ultimate city for ourselves based on the amenities that we most use. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I do too. But I think going back to Indabuff's email, she makes a really good point about the appearance of life to new players, people who just start playing EQ2. If they don't see anybody around, you know, yeah, there's level chat, but I don't know. I feel like you need to see people in order to stay interested, to stay. If you're a new player, you're not going to be able to see anything other than 1 through 9. And is that really the busiest channel?
It's one of the top two, but you're right, because either folks are hanging out in today in 89 to 90 or 1 to 9. And a brand new player who just joined the game and just landed in East Freeport, for example, is only going to see 1 through 9. Right. Or in Gorwin or in Kelithin or one of the new cities as well. So you're right. Indabuff makes a very good point. What about the new player who doesn't have access to the higher level channels where there might be more players at the end game? They're going to see a very, for lack of better terms, lonely game for an MMO. There's not people running around, and they're not getting that warm and fuzzy because they see them in channel.
Well, let's hope they see people in the starting cities. I mean, usually there are a number of people in the starting cities.
Yeah, and I think that's right. But it's just like the buff says, it's a balancing act.
Yeah.
Got to make sure you deal with both those veterans like us who can afford to live in a guild hall with all the amenities and know there are players out there because I see them all the time in the level channels or I see them at high-end instance zone-in areas. But making sure that the new player who just joined yesterday still sees all those people too and has that MMO experience of, gee, there's a lot of people here all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was all the emails that we had, or...
No, actually, we have one more, a surprise email, Del. You're going to love this one.
It was not on the agenda. I had two emails listed here.
No, it's a mystery letter. And I'm going to let you try and guess who it's from.
Okay.
I'll start off reading it, and I'll let you guess after I get past a certain point. Hey, Alicious.
Nathan Ironforge.
Stop. I'd say Delmon hello, but I have a bone to beat you over the head with. I'm sure you want emails from your listeners and not to berate or torment or ridicule them. I don't make fun of the name Delmon. Don't pick on other players' names unless you want their wrath on you. Who am I?
You're Nathan Ironforge.
No!
I think I know who this is. Is this from Spiders Z?
It's from Spiders.
Okay.
Yes. Spiders.
Most people pluralize spiders with an S, not a Z.
Perhaps the name was taken.
I don't say J's. I say J-Z.
What? No, J-Z has a hyphen or a space. Are you trying to equate spiders with J-Z? Okay, wow.
What are you saying? Spiders is not as cool as J-Z is?
Oh, there you go, putting words in my mouth, getting me in trouble. I'm the nice one here, Del. Let's not forget this.
You just keep thinking that.
I do. So Spiders has put together, actually, this started out as Tells in-game, and I asked him to send an email because I wanted to hear his ideas and really give attention to them. And when I'm getting Tells in-game, when it's detailed, I pretty much forget it, or, you know, I'll have to go back in my logs, and it's just not, it's not as clearly defined as getting an email, and then we can actually discuss it on the show if it's an email. So he has put together a list of 7 items, and there's quite a lot here, but I thought we could break this out into sections and just sort of talk about, you know, read his first point and talk about it a little bit before we move on to the next one. Does that work for you?
That works for me.
All right. Okay, after listening to episode 13, there are a few things I wanted to say to think about. Number one, the point of XP versus AA progression and what makes better sense. For the newer player, I would suggest going the route of levels before AA. Reason being, most of the population is at or around level 90. I'm sure they would rather learn from those players than an alt of someone who is already at that level. Difference being, if they are grouping with friends constantly, then I would suggest the opposite and to keep in line with their friends. And we sort of talked about this on this, the last show, and maybe another one before about EXP versus AA. Set your slider. And I think, Del, we already know that you also agree that it's EXP before AA.
Yes, I agree with Spiders. Or Spiders agrees with me, yes.
Okay. Number 2. I wish SOE would do some things to not lean us towards the station cache for new goodies or for those nicer-looking cloaks or armors and give us an in-game option for being able to acquire them, a new faction to grind for it, or buy it for station cache. Give us, the players, the option to get it without having to get station cash to obtain some of the newer-looking armors. What do you think about that?
I agree with it, but I don't see it happening. Because if they put it on station cash, they can make a profit on it. If they put it on station cash or let you grind it, well, then they're losing out on an opportunity because cheap sons of guns like me will grind for it.
So what about using the EQ2X server for that? Like, you know, putting the station cache items on EQ2X and giving the live servers, make it a quested item or a faction item or whatever, reward for something.
I certainly can agree with that, and I agree with it in principle. The corporation's goal is to make money.
Right.
And if they can sell it rather than give it away for free, even if it's, you know, it's free, it's work for us, but it's free, they're not going to do that. They're going to want to sell it.
Well, it's, yeah, I guess you could say it's free, even though.
They're not going to generate any revenue off of it.
It's not really free. Extra revenue.
Right.
So the question is, what's a deal breaker for the players? And I think a you know, nice new looking armor isn't going to be necessarily a deal breaker. In other words, what would make us stop subscribing? How far can they push until we quit?
Well, they've been doing it for a while. They've been putting things up there basically, what, every week? New items and station cash.
Yeah.
They've been doing
it weekly. Generally, they're fluff items, so they are sticking to that.
Oh, so you're talking about, like, the new kick-ass sword with stats and...
What sword?
Well, I'm just saying the item that you are asking about, would that be the deal breaker if it had stats and was the best kick-ass sword in the game? Yeah, that could be a deal breaker for a lot of people because, again, it kind of goes against the original statement that station cash is for the fluff.
Right.
Online.
Well, I don't think we're going to win on that one. But in any case, we agree with spiders.
Yes.
Okay. Number three, the server merges. Where in the two sets of servers that have been merged currently, now at the time of this, I believe that was only the first two. This was before the Unrest merge? No, it was right after the Unrest. We were second, right?
I think so, yes.
Okay. It did involve downtime for those servers and some minor problems on the off servers. Some of the off servers, such as mine, Luke and Delair, RP, have not been mentioned with any plans and a population that is dwindling daily, it seems, both from players getting bored or lack of population waiting on the expansion. Give the players in situations such as mine a free option to transfer to servers they want to transfer to if you're not planning on honestly telling us the plan for us or, quote-unquote, awaiting the populations after all the other server merges. Do you understand what he's referring to there?
I believe so. I think SOE has a plan, and they executed that plan. They did not want to give people a open, free opportunity to move around because then they would have had to reanalyze load and balance all over again. They had the history based on the way the system has been working, and it is what it is. Luke and Delir is in a odd position because it is classified as a role-play server, which is just a fluff title, really. I mean, there's no role-play rule set. It's just role-play designated. If you want to do that, here's a good place to congregate. The problem is that the other one, the Antonia Bale server, from everything we've heard, is the heaviest load server. So it would have been difficult to move those two sets together. There is the opportunity to get off Luke and Delir if you're unhappy. It does cost money, but there is an option. So I don't foresee them offering free transfers off of non-merged servers to get to heavily populated servers or recently merged servers.
Yeah, it's a pickle. And I really feel for those folks who are on servers that are in this quandary where they can't be merged for one reason or another, but their populations are suffering. But then again, I don't feel that sorry for spiders because I've seen their raid progression. So
he's doing pretty well over there. I can feel for him well as well. However, there is an out for those folks. It does
cost money. Right. And he's asking a free option to transfer. You know, and I think the RP thing, you say, you know, it's not, there's no RP rule set per se, but it is an agreement. SOE basically called it an RP server, so they have to stand by that statement and not merge an RP server with a non-RP server.
Correct.
They are sort of in a pickle. And I do feel for players on Luke and Delir and any other server that is affected in this way, because I have to say, since our merge, I really feel like the population, I really feel like there's more life in the game. It's even if there's arguing on level channels or whatever, even if there is, you know, still feeling out pugs and whatnot, it feels more lively. It feels better. I'm happy with the merge after the fact. I was okay with things the way they were. But now that there's more people, it feels better. I like it.
I agree.
So I'm sorry, not to rub salt in the wounds, spiders. Maybe they'll figure out something. And hopefully in the meantime, you guys can keep on progressing through your content, even though you're pretty much done, right? You only have to wait till February 8th for new stuff, because you guys completed the expansion. And congrats, by the way. So number four, ready for number four?
Yes, I'm ready.
The EQ2 versus EQ2X discussion. It seems, in my opinion, the difference is yet again going back to station cash and how much players want to pay in microtransactions, also known as station cash. Quit nickel and diming us, the paying customers, or give us more options versus the EQ2 players. And then he says, post episode 13, I'm thinking maybe he wrote the rest of it after he listened to our last podcast, but... Another example of this is the free blood character options, available before the expansion for 2,000 station cash, but also promised if you did the promotional gimmick with a standard account in good standing / ordered the expansion by February. So, Del, you and I had a conversation about this last night, did we not?
We did.
The free blood, free whatever, whatever race option.
The free in quotes blood.
Yes, and the fact that they made it available on Station Cash prior to when it's being given for free.
My opinion, it is what it is. We're in their world now. If this is how they want to sell stuff in game, they're going to do it. It doesn't matter if there are 100 pages of threads of people saying, we don't want this. They're still going to do it, and people bought them. If you looked shortly after that, there were a lot of free bloods running around on Unrest. All you had to do was Who All Vampire, and you can see them. A lot of people took advantage of this. There are a lot of people who didn't care for it and didn't take advantage of it, but some did, including some of my own guildmates, who shocked me. But, hey, to each their own, all I have to say is it looks like Sony is right that... people do want this because they are paying for it, even though they could have waited for the race to be unlocked in February. But they wanted it now, and they're willing to pay for it. It's like, I guess, ordering overnight shipping. It'll get here in a week, but if you really want it and got to have it now, you pay extra, yeah. And people did.
Well, my argument, which maybe other people will disagree with, but my argument is that it was sort of trickery to... first say that it's being given for free. Well, for those people who aren't tapped into the forums or reading every single thing, the first thing you see when you log into the game is the marketplace on the welcome screen. And the very top thing on there is for 2,000 station cash, you can be a vampire. And they don't tell you, well, if you have an account in good standing and you buy the expansion... you're going to get it for free anyway later. You just have to wait for it. They don't say it's an early unlock. They say it's $20. Which, by the way, how convenient that we just had a double station cash weekend where you can turn in your station cash. So you get $10 of station cash, it gets you $20.
You're correct that they did not disclose, if you want to call it, all the fine print on those windows. Fair enough.
Yes, but it's a business. It is a business. And, you know, we have to keep going back to that and reminding ourselves of that. This is not the old days of EQ2. This is not for the love of the game. This is not a bunch of devs sitting around and seeing what they can do, what cool new thing they can do. And all they're trying to do is make people happy and enjoy the game. There is another side to it. It's a business. And I think that shareholders would be unhappy if they didn't make money. So I just have to keep remembering that it's not about the love. It's about the money.
Yes, and I hate to keep saying the same line over and over again. It is what it is. It's not going to change. And I guess I'm kind of done flailing my arms and kicking kittens about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in their world now. And yeah. If this is what they're going to do, ultimately I will decide at some point whether or not that this is still for me. Today it is right. Still for me. I'm okay with it. I choose not to engage in it. Not to participate in it. But it's okay if those who want to. So I'm cool with it. It's over there. I'm not doing it. But that's fine.
Well, here's my difference, I guess. Me and you differ a little bit. I have bought things with Station Cash. The only money, real money, that I've spent on Station Cash is gifting to other people. So I will buy a card and give it to other people. When we had people over for Labor Day weekend, I had bought a bunch of Station Cash cards, and we did a scavenger hunt, and I gave the Station Cash cards as some of the gifts, some of the prizes, if you will. When I use Station Cash in game, it's gifted to me by someone else. Now, you may take issue with that and say, well, you're still spending money. If someone gives it to me as a gift, to me, I'm not spending my own money. And if I spend my money to give somebody else a gift, then I'm spending money on giving someone a gift. And in this particular scenario, I was giving a gift to someone. It was a prize for a game outside of EQ2, and they can do with it what they want. They can burn it in the fireplace if they want and never use it.
Right, and I've chosen not to, and that's my personal choice. I'm not certainly on some type of crusade to rid the world of Station Cash. I have some. I've been gifted it. I've been granted it from other games or the Facebook promotion that they did a long time ago, I believe. That's fine. I just choose not to use it, and I'm okay with that. So that's my little stump to stand on. I'm not pushing that on other people. I've just chosen not to. And, you know, for folks who do want to, go right ahead. I'm not trying to foist my beliefs on others. It's just how I choose to approach the subject.
That's perfectly acceptable. I will admit to having purchased quite a bit of LON booster packs, and I've been in treatment, and I'm now happily LON free, non-practicing LON booster pack addict. It's a challenge. It's those damn paintings. Okay, so next topic, number 5. The lack of players in the game world, where guild halls were the great experiment to see what would happen. The population shift was to guild halls and their civilization. Most players camp out in them, do their transactions in them, repair and utilize the strategists from their guild hall. The only time I really actually see players outside in the world is either in groups for instances, if there's a guide event going on, or one of the seasonal/world events. Bring some of the guild hall amenities out of the guild halls and back into the cities. You, SOE, created content for the players, funnel them back into it. Now, on this part, I've heard rumors about SOE funneling newer characters to the newer starting zones, New Halas and Gorwin, and removing the starting islands with plans to, quote-unquote, update the older cities, Kinos and Freeport. Hopefully, the next expansion will show some of that progression. Otherwise, there's content from those older zones in the cities that is getting bypassed from the players that were not around when each section of the cities had their own alliance after the starting island adventure. So I had alluded to this a little bit in the previous email. I believe he's talking about where we were told that the islands were being removed. They wanted to make the cities, Kinos and Freeport, more like quest hubs. And I think he is intimating that maybe in the next expansion they will actually follow through with that sort of promise. What do you think about that, Del?
I think it would be nice to, like we said, to have the cities. We talked a little bit about the guild halls taking over their functionality. Kelithin, New Halas, Gorwin certainly are quest hubs to get you going for folks who are going through those now. I think it's a little bit of a challenge being a veteran, having known what the cities are and having known what Freeport and Kinos are today. They're different, but Halas, Gorwin, and Kelithin are very different from Freeport and Kinos in the way they're laid out, quests that they grant, and how they're done. So I don't know. I think it would be nice to have more active cities, but it's also nice to have more other active zones. I don't know.
I think it would be really cool if they made Kinos and Freeport like higher level quest hubs. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. You know, where it's like a quest hub for higher level type quests where it's safe to be there, or maybe not safe. Maybe there are creatures roaming the streets where you can't use them like cities anymore. I don't know. I think it would be cool if they did something with those towns because they are the basis for EQ.
I don't think they're going to be quest hubs for high level players because quest hubs are centered now around what you need to kill or what you need to do. They're not centered around having to zone two zones over to get to it. So unless what you need to quest is in Kinos or Freeport, they're not going to put high level quest givers there. That makes you then go back out to, say, Sundered Frontier or out into Velius to do them.
I guess I'm not saying to do that. I'm saying somehow to make it so that it works.
Oh, okay.
Like envisioning something other than we have right now, where it's safe to walk through Kinos or Freeport, if you're aligned correctly. Somehow, I don't know. I just think it would be neat to use them in some way instead of having them just sit there and languish. I mean, they're basically there for transporting yourself from point A to point B.
One thing that I think they have potential for is if they itemized the epic guards that are there or the other guards that are there. So you could go in and fight them. I think that might be interesting.
It would be very interesting, but wow, that would be interesting. I'm picturing the lag fest that would be Kinos Harbor. Although I do remember the days of when Kinos Harbor was a horrible lag fest. And I did not like it at all. So, whatever. It's the balance. I think it would be interesting if they would do something with them. I don't know what that something would be, but maybe they will. So, number six, you ready?
Yep.
The actual characters meaning something. When EQ2 initially launched, there were some hardcore aspects that got eventually dropped to the waistline. I think he means by the wayside. Initially, you started as an archetype, and then as you leveled, you chose your subclass, leveled some more, and then eventually your particular class, learning both the individual class aspects and then your archetype. While the harshness of this has dropped and the game has gone more of the casual route, some players have yet to learn their classes, and the current way that SOE is making both progression and not focusing on how players should learn it even worse. I know level 90 characters that have not learned the basics because SOE did not force them to show the differences between their classes. And yes, I have seen this even at the raid level. So it's not just at the casual level. What do you think about that?
They're never going to bring back the archetype thing. That is a thing of the past that we remember romantically. I do agree there are people who don't know their class and don't know their skills, but I think you're going to find that in all walks of life, and I don't think there's any way to teach people that. Those who want to learn it will learn it. Those who want to get to 90 just by running up and killing down arrow mobs during double XP weekend will do that and get to 90 very quickly. The archetype thing is history, not coming back.
I agree it's not coming back, but I think what Spiders is maybe saying is there are a lot more people who are level 90 who don't know the very, very most basic things about their character, that it's hard for us to comprehend. Yes, there are people in all walks of life like that. But when you're looking at the population and you're seeing that percentage go way up, and you know that it's because of the way the game has changed, it is really frustrating. So I think that what we have to do as players is be more selective about how we group and how we raid and who we choose to, you know, it's sort of like doing a background check, you know, instead of simply doing a pickup and hoping for the best, maybe check out what they're wearing. Maybe, I don't know, maybe do a group before you do a raid or invite them to your guild. Maybe one group is enough for you to know whether someone's good. Maybe make use of that friends list a little more. Maybe keep a little notebook like Delmont does. This person is good player. Here's my list of good healers. Here's my list of bad healers. I think it puts more of the onus back on the player to be more attentive, more in tune with, you know, watching who's good and who's bad. It is unfortunate, though, and I think that's kind of the general, the way the game is going. And I fear that it's the vast majority of the population is going in that direction.
I have to because say, they, I disagree. They've done the, blah, blah, blah. I disagree.
Okay.
I think people are so desperate because the player numbers, and this is maybe a little bit prior merger, the player numbers for us were so far down. You were so desperate to get anybody. And I think our guild was in this position a little bit. We were so shorthanded, we were willing to take people off the street, still wearing master-crafted gear, and say, as long as you're motivated enough to raid, we'll get you geared up and AA'd out. We have a number of AAAs, but you know what? You don't have that. That's okay. We're so desperate for your to fill 24 slots, we'll take you. I think that goes on at the raid level and at the heroic level as well, that if you need a healer, okay, he's the only one who's accepted this group, and we've been trying for 30 minutes to find somebody. Let's see if we can power through it, even if he's wearing uncommon gear from Butcher Block. You know, you're so desperate, you'll just take anybody.
But I don't think either Spiders or I are talking about gear. We're talking about knowing your class, understanding how to play your class. And I know that there's a difference between his level of knowing your class and my level of knowing your class and some level of knowing your class. Like, I don't know my class. He probably, from his point of view, looking at me, I look like a slacker, noob, you know, and I probably do. But there are people who know less than I do. And then there are people who know less than they do. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not about gear.
Gear is the only tangible thing I can measure against. I mean,
but we're not talking about gear. We're talking about knowing how to play your class. Right. I've met healers who do not know how to heal, who have been out healed on a raid by a dirge, by a troubadour.
Don't bring healing into act parsing. Don't get me going on act parsing for heals.
No. I don't want to hear this. It's impossible to not show up on a heal parse. If, you know, to be out healed by a non-healer class. I mean, non-healer classes like classes that don't even have heals.
Okay, here's the thing. What are you going to do? You're going to issue folks an SAT test to fill out on whether or not they know how to play? This is so hard. This is a very subjective thing. But sometimes I'm so desperate for this group, I just need to get through
out. Hey, then you teach them how to play. You teach them how that there's a difference between Cure Curse and Cure Arcane. Teach them that. Even though you've told them this 12 times, how do they not still understand that there is a difference? That there is a button called Cure Curse.
But here's the thing. I'm so desperate to get through Outer Vault to either get that quest update or hope for the exquisite that drops off such and such for an item that I might, you know what? If it's a pug person, I'll take him, and you know what? As long as that curse doesn't kill me, and if it does...
It will kill you. It will kill you, and it will kill you again, and you'll tell them how to do it, and it'll kill you again. You'll tell them how to do it again. It'll kill you again, and you will be beating your head against a wall, and you will wonder whether this person understands the language that you are speaking.
I understand that, but once I get through that zone, I'm done with them. I just need to get through that zone.
Okay, so now what do you do? Now what do you do with this person who doesn't know how to play their class? Do you add them to your list of terrible healers?
I make a mental note of them, and when I see that person again, I might be more apt to avoid them unless I desperately need that zone again.
So in other words, you basically agree with me, but you're just willing to go further than me.
Yeah, I've said in the past, I'm willing to group with Satan himself if he'll get me a quest update.
But it's not going to change. You think you can fix everything. You can't fix everything.
No, I don't think I can fix it. I think I can power level through it. Or power through it. Not power level through it, but power myself through it. We'll get through this somehow. By the grace of God, we'll just get this through.
Well, I'm not talking, just so we are clear here, I am not talking about gear. I have no problem bringing somebody new in who has mastercrafted or whatever, and getting them geared up so they can get up to speed with what we're doing, whether it be a group or a raid or whatever. I have no problem going back and helping people get gear. What I have an issue with is the fact that there, the game essentially makes it very easy to get to endgame and have no clue whatsoever how to play your class. Not about gear.
No, I'm gear not debating that. Yeah, I'm not debating that that's possible.
Happens a hell of a lot more than it used to. And it's because of the way the game has been changed. Maybe that's just, it is what it is, and we just have to accept the fact that they've taken a complex game and made it and simplified it so that you can get to the end without knowing anything, but you're still capable of doing this end game content. You just have to stick with the people who used to be here and actually know something.
Right. I think, and I might be a good example of this in terms of two forms. I was talking about the Bruiser earlier. I have gotten him into the 40s. He has nothing more than apprentice spells and whatever gear has dropped along the way, much like the Troubadour went through life, although he got spells. He's managed to kill stuff, and he can get through it, and he was doing it on double XP weekend, so he was moving that much faster. So, yes, this guy is going to get to 90, and he's going to have apprentice and legendary, if he's lucky, gear. And I'm going to get through all 90 levels. However, I know myself. I would never join that guy into a group and say, by the way, I can tank. I don't even know which buttons are the taunt buttons yet because I don't need them. Because I'm the one fighting the mob because I've been doing it solo. So, yes, I don't know how to play a Bruiser at all. And I would never profess to bring a Bruiser to a group unless I told that group up front, by the way, I PL'd this guy from 0 to 90 and he's got all apprentice. So I'm literally a leech on this group. I am just here to suck up AAs or whatever might drop along the way because you need a sixth. I think a lot of people are unwilling to admit that or don't want to admit that.
I wouldn't dare play any of my alts. For real.
I wouldn't either. I mean, I've joined a few guild groups and said, hey, guys, listen, this guy, it's the equivalent of being on auto follow.
Right. I'm very reluctant to bring. I did start my coercer. I started her after 2009 fanfare, about 2 weeks after fanfare, and with the intention of basically PLing her up to current content and bringing her on a raid specifically for Nexona. And I never actually did Nexona on her until it was old tier. That was my intention. And I did try to play her. I did try to learn her, but I didn't put that much effort into it. Once we didn't need her anymore, I sort of like blew her off. So she's the only one I've ever really tried to learn anything on. But if it was my only character, I don't know. I guess if I were a new player, I would try to understand what I'm doing. I think that there are people who have played other MMOs who understand the concepts that EQ2 has in place. So even if they're not handed or spoon-fed that information, they get it. You know, like Indebuff came from WoW and Sprouts came from Ultima Online. They get the basic concept of this game. So they maybe are not your typical new player who's, you know, never played an MMO.
Yes,
but I think the average new player who has never played an MMO is, if they're not being given the information, so they don't know it.
But to play at Spider's level that he's referring to, everybody has the concept of having played an MMO, but you're not going to know what Devastating Fist does in EverQuest 2 unless you've read the spell description and actually used it many times and figured out how it works, what it stacks with, what it doesn't stack with.
Right.
And all that sort of
stuff. Well, and like I said before, there are levels of understanding your character. You know, there are nuances that I'm actually talking about the basics of, you know, if you're a healer, you need to heal people in your group. That's kind of basic. Right? That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about
as a healer,
and all the, you know, nuances. I'm talking about the basics. You know, like if I'm a ranger, I need to use a bow.
What's a cure?
All right. So number 7. Raiding is meant to be hardcore. It's meant to make you bare your teeth, flex your muscle, and communicate with your fellow raiders and guildmates. It's meant to show those that are relentless in the pursuit to kill anything and everything in their path to accomplish this. It's not meant for the meek, the whiner, the drama queen, nor the alpha wolf that likes to run solo. It's all about communication and getting everyone on the same page to accomplish the goal, whatever it should be, whether it be just to clear Protector's Realm or the aim to kill the currently highly coveted Master in depths, underfoot depths. I don't read that, so, because I don't know how to say his name. Master Yael?
Master Yael.
Yael? Where SOE does provide good content in this area, and in my humble opinion, they are the true pioneer of what is modern-day raiding. Please give us more options for raid utility stock in-game. I don't really know what that means. Act for parses or as some of the upper-tiered guilds using Guild Connect to set timers and such, for example. Or, even better, give us, the players, the ability to help integrate these types of utilities, such as some other MMOs do. Okay, that's the end of his number 7. The sentence where he says, please give us more options for raid utility stock in-game, I think he's referring to incorporating some of the third-party tools that players have come to use, incorporating that into the game itself. Am I understanding this correctly?
I believe that's where he's coming from, yes.
What do you think of that thought?
Well, I think the problem is when they incorporate tools, in their vision of the tool. However, tools like ACT and Guild Connect are highly customizable, and people want all that customization. They want to be able to tune it, tweak it, and twist it into whatever best works for them. And when you try to put a tool in like that, you're probably only going to put some basic functionality or some system and not all the additional add-ons that people are eventually going to want. One example I think of this is they added points to the guild window.
Yeah, that nobody ever uses.
Exactly, because it's very basic. It's a number. But people want to know raid attendance and loot history and loot history values and all that sort of stuff that you get in a full-blown DKP system, a third-party tool, a web-based tool that other people are using. So I think while, yes, it would be nice to have ACT and Guild Connect-like functionality built into the game, it will never be as advanced or customizable as those tools are that people want or want them to be. So it's best left to that sort of stuff. The only tool that I've ever seen them bring in that I think really cut the mustard is the voice chat system. I really think that fills just about everything that somebody could possibly want. I hate using Ventrilo. It's yet another tool I have to use, because I do believe the in-game voice one does meet all the needs, except for being linked in and still being able to talk.
Well, you're right. Never mind.
So I think that's the challenge. Yes, some of these tools in-game would be nice. They would be fantastic. They'll never be as advanced as the tool makers are making them externally.
Okay. What about his idea of incorporating those tools as they are, as opposed to making an EQ2 version of it?
Well, they've kind of incorporated some of the maps functionality and somewhat, but again, there's things that are more advanced. I just don't see them wanting to do that. They always said we don't have voice because there are better tools out there that can do it better. But then they did integrate voice, and I think it is one of the best things that SOE has ever implemented in terms of bringing an external function into the game. I think if they try to bring ACT or Guild Connect into the game, I think it's going to come short. It's never going to meet up with what we need. I think it'll wind up like the points window.
Well, I think that is a Frostfell wish. So we can chalk it up to everybody's allowed to wish.
Actually, can I make one more point about it? I think, too, because it is so late in the game, and people have become so entrenched in those external tools, they will not let go of them as players. think of the LFG window. We started out, we didn't have that. So people used level channels. They used Shout. They found their own systems of doing it. By the time the LFG window came in, people had already invented solutions to that. Nobody. Does anybody? Nobody uses that.
I never even looked at it.
Exactly.
But maybe there are some people who do. I don't know. I've seen people go around with the LFG tag on. I don't know if that actually does anything.
I think it does. It puts you in that window, but nobody leverages that tool. I think the ship had already sailed on LFG functionality before that tool came in.
So maybe what's the point of them spending effort to do something to integrate those tools if no one's going to use them after all?
Exactly.
Okay. So that about wraps it up. Let me just read the tagline at the end here. Okay, I think that's enough at the moment on my mind. Delmon, this is your pre-warning. You make fun of the name, you got to deal with a dirge with a rusty can opener coming at you to peel you out of that nice shiny armor. Side Spiders from the Lucan Delair server. Thank you, Spiders, for that wonderful email. You gave us a lot to talk about.
And certainly, Spiders got us all fired up.
Yeah.
So my final all fired up comment will be, Spider Z, you know where I am. Bring it.
Oh, man, you're so dead. Del, you can't even beat me in a duel.
Running away sometimes is the better part of valor. So Spider Z, keep that in mind when you're running away.
Spiders, just remember, I'm on your side. So the other day we were talking about what we might want to talk about on this podcast. And we came up with the idea of underappreciated zones. So when we talked about doing this topic, we wanted to come up with some zones we thought were underused, underplayed, basically underappreciated areas. Places we would like to see revived, rejuvenated, and reinvigorated. Maybe have some new life breathed into them. So, Del, you and I interpreted this concept a little bit differently, didn't we?
Yes, you gave an excellent explanation of what you thought we should do, and I just did what I wanted to do anyways and reinvented that definition. So the one that I kind of toyed with as I'm going through the zones is zones that I felt didn't live up to the hype or didn't live up to what I thought the hype should be or didn't meet their potential. So, you know, we took the same kind of thought, but we twisted it a little bit differently for the zones we wanted to talk about.
My interpretation of this concept was basically to come up with zones that I thought the players were missing out on, maybe. Areas that, because of the changes that have come to the game over the many years that it's been around, maybe zones that have been forgotten about that are great for one reason or another, or maybe zones that are being missed content, missed opportunities for players from the player's point of view.
So I think our unique interpretation of our goal, although might have been different for each of us, still will lead to a good discussion about some of these zones and maybe spur folks to think about some of these zones as well.
So, Del, do you want to start off with your first one?
Sure, my first zone was Rivervale.
Okay, why did you pick Rivervale?
The reason I chose Rivervale was because it seems to be a zone that has no story to take you there. It is this zone that hangs off Enchanted Lands, and there's no major quest line that seems to take you in there and make you spend a lot of time in there, compared to some of the other zones that are in that level range. So I think it has a lot of potential. It is the home city of the Havelings, but it just seems to fall short because of that. It just seems to stop. It's there. You can do it. There are a few HQs that make you go in there and do those, but it just seems to be this zone that's a stub that's hanging off the edge. It's okay to go there, but you don't have to.
That's really interesting. I guess I sort of agree, but like you said, there are some HQs that drive you there. People do, I think, go there, maybe just because we had a different idea of what this question really was about. I guess I can see your point that is sort of a missed opportunity zone. In many ways.
And I think one of those huge missed opportunities is that in Rivervale, more so than in Enchanted Lands, we have this influence of the void. We have the void beasts and those crazy ladies with the horns.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And we had two expansions that were extremely void-driven, but this other void content, well, it just seemed to be floating over there. It didn't tie into the rest of this whole void storyline. So again, it just seems to be oddly placed and out of place a little bit because of that. So which was first on your list?
My first zone was Stormhold. Again, with looking at this from a different point of view, my thought is that Stormhold is a really great zone for its level. And back in the day when that was sort of, when level 50 was sort of the end game, the upper teens, lower 20s, that was a perfect zone. That dungeon was the perfect dungeon to group in and run through there and gain a lot of levels, gain a lot of XP. People don't go there anymore because when you start a new character, you're elsewhere, first of all. And even when you start, even back when the islands still existed, I think you blow through the 20s so quickly that there's no need to go into a dungeon. You could just be following quest lines outside in the overland zones and sort of blow through those levels really quickly. But it's a great zone. There's a lot of names in there. And there are a lot of little areas, and there you can get lost. There's the whole Claymore. It's a really, really cool zone, and I actually like going back there every now and then, mentor down and go back.
Another zone that I think fits that description as well is Blackburrow.
Yes, I would agree with that.
It's so easy just to go right by them and almost not even realize that they're there based on your level.
Right, and Stormhold is actually sort of tucked away a little further than Blackburrow.
You're right.
It's easier to miss, I think, unless you're deliberately going there for something. So that was my number one, Stormhold.
Okay. My second one that I had was from Rise of Kunark, Karnor's Castle.
All right. So why was that one on your list?
Karnor's Castle, and this goes back a little bit to EverQuest 1, was such an iconic zone. Everybody did Karnor's Castle. Everybody has stories about it, both horror stories and triumphant stories. Not sure if everybody loved the zone, but everybody did the zone, and it was just the zone in EverQuest 1. It made trains what they are today. And when I heard that Kunark was going to be in EverQuest 2, immediately, Karnor's Castle came to mind. That's got to be there. And sure enough, we did get it. But it just never lived up to the EverQuest 1 fantasy that I had of it. I thought it was going to be like the Sanctum of Scaleborn of that expansion, where like every quest line drove you in there. You were going in, you were killing things, coming out, going back in there, diving deep, getting stuff, going back in and out. And doing lots of stuff in there, and it would be the zone that everybody did. But it just seemed to fall short of that. It went through two, maybe three revamps, I don't really remember, after it launched. There's certainly no feeling of training in there. And there's only a couple of quests that go in there. I think I spent more time getting to Parbuster's Lair in that zone than I did doing anything else in that zone. I almost never adventured in there. I got what I needed and got out. It didn't just seem to be this awesome place that I remember from EverQuest 1. It fell short. So that's why I felt this was an underutilized zone and didn't meet its potential.
I would agree. I think what Karnor's Castle draws these days is people farming names for drops or for AA maybe. I don't know what they're doing in there. But I usually only see single individual players in there.
Absolutely. And it just never seemed to be the hot spot that it was from the EverQuest 1 days. And I think that's why it fell short.
I had a bunch of quests in there that sat in my journal for quite a long time because I couldn't get anyone any, no groups were going there. So I guess I agree with that one.
Okay. So what did you have next?
Poets Palace was my next one. Poets Palace is probably my favorite zone in the entire game. I think it's a beautiful zone, art-wise. It has a lot of names in there. It has a lot of challenge, even just from the beginning. It has that access quest that even though you've done the access, you still have to do certain things to get to the top. And I love that zone. I love it. I don't know what else there is to say. And I feel like there are not enough people who have been there or, I mean, there are people who go there because they have to for one reason or another. You have to go through there for epic repercussions, I want to say.
I'm drawing a blank on that as well. I do remember the Troubadour Epic makes you go through there.
There's some epic or something like that that makes you go there that people were still needing at 90. We had people looking for somebody who had access. Well, of course I have access, and I love going there. So I will go and walk through people through there sometimes when I'm asked. And I really feel like it's a zone that everybody should try.
It is a fun zone, and like you say, it's very much off the beaten path.
Yeah.
Because, well, it's off of Shimmering Citadel, which is off the beaten path as well, because it's floating up there in midair.
Right. Off of Pillars of Flame, which you could also say is kind of off the beaten path as well.
If there was one comment I could make about Poet's Palace that still drives me bonkers to this day, is when you're doing the access quest kind of over again, like you're talking about, you have to move those little Cyclops statuettes.
Yeah.
The door stays open long enough for you to run through it, grab the statue, and run just back to it. If the door would just stay open for about 3 or 4 more seconds, I could run all the way through it. Then you have to put the statue down, open the door, bend down, pick up the statue again, move it. That is so annoying. If they could just give that door a few more seconds or make it an auto-open door, that would be the only thing I would ever change to Poet's Palace, because I do agree. I think that was a great zone. I loved it.
I wouldn't change a thing. I love it. Just the way it is. And I fear mentioning it all because I don't want it to be on anyone's radar of things to change.
And two, it came in many different flavors too, didn't it?
Yes, and I don't know that I've been through all of them. There were 6 versions or something?
Something like that. We always went for the easiest one just so we could turn and burn it because it can be a long zone.
So what was your third and final zone, Tal?
I actually had a hard time coming up with a third one, and I debated with this one a lot because I had a hard time fitting this into my description of what I thought we were trying to answer, and I'm not sure if it applies to everyone or just me, and that's where I got stuck on it. And that zone is Icy Keep Retribution.
The raid zone.
The raid zone, absolutely. I debated with this one because I love this zone. I think the encounters are smart. I think they're well done. I think they're interesting and they're different. They're not tank and spank. They're not joust in, joust out, do this, do that. They're not click here, click here, click here. So for that reason, I think it's a great zone. Where I think the zone falls short is its itemization. The rewards for doing stuff in there don't match up to what I would say would be raid level difficulty. Now, granted, in terms of raid progression, this one is on the easier end of the scale, the easier end of the spectrum. But even then, the itemization still doesn't match up for it, I don't think. Now, I'm certainly willing to be proven wrong by folks who say, hey, Del, I don't raid regularly. That stuff is kick-ass. We do that zone all the time, and we are getting tons of great rewards that people are using. Maybe I'm looking at it through my glasses, my vision of where I am in raid progression, so that we don't do it that much because there's nothing to be rewarded with out of there. I'm not sure, and I had a hard time putting it on this list because of that. I don't see a lot of rewards out of that, so therefore I think itemization is not that great. Now, there may be players out there who say, Del, that zone is right up our alley. That's right up where we are in terms of progression. We are getting great rewards out of it. So I had a hard time with the third one, but I do think Icy Keep Retribution, great zone, great implementation, great encounters, just lousy rewards for where I am today.
Well, I would agree, actually, on a couple of points. I think it's a great zone. I like the encounters. I think it's interesting and different and unique. And for that reason alone, I think it should be more on the radar of raiders. But like you said, the itemization maybe falls short. There is one part about the itemization that I do have a bone to pick with, and that is some of the drops that you get from the chests are actually quest starters that turn into one of several items as an option, which I think that in itself is kind of neat, you know, and that sort of makes you keep going back there as a raid force or as an individual trying to get into a raid force that's going back there. But the problem that I have is that the final end items on those quests that, by the way, are extremely lengthy to finish. I still have two more that I need to finish. Those rewards also drop as the item itself from other chests in the zone. While you have maybe spent DKP to get a quest starter for an item where the end item is something you want, in the meantime, while you're getting all the updates to complete that quest, maybe the item drops and somebody else gets it, or you could easily get it for more DKP, but meanwhile you have this quest starter that is waiting in the wings for you to finish. That part's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I can understand that, especially as a hardcore quester wanting to get those quest drops so you can get the quest credit for them.
Right. But, you know, overall, I think that that's just like a minor tweak.
So what was your third and final one?
You're going to think this is weird, but my third one is a zone called Ice Spire Summit.
Never heard of it.
Exactly. And that's why it's on my list. I was going through the zone progression list. I was reading through it, like trying to get ideas for what zones I thought were going to make it to my list. And I came across this one and I'm racking my brain trying to figure out where the hell this zone is. It's apparently somewhere off of Everfrost. It's a times two raid zone, level 40 to 49-ish. And I'm pretty sure I've never been there. I have never heard of this zone. I can imagine that it might be somehow related to Miracle's Menagerie. Maybe it's the raid zone or the times two version of that. I don't know. I'm thinking about adding it to my list of things to check out in game in the next few weeks because I've never heard of the zone. So therefore, I believe it's underutilized and underappreciated.
Yeah, I wonder if it's kind of one of those classic zones from original launch where they had raid encounters, but at that point we certainly weren't ready for raiding. Now they've fallen by the wayside because they're in the 50s range, that high-end range at the end, which is so far, so long ago, and who really raids at those levels? Everybody seems to be racing towards the end game now where they've eliminated epic mobs that spawn in the world, contested at lower levels. So this may be just some languishing zone from an age gone by.
It's a times two also.
Interesting. I wonder, do we even think it's still there?
I would be surprised if it was gone. I'm fairly certain it's got to be still there.
Okay.
We would have probably seen a line through it on the wiki or Zam.
Perhaps.
So I'm going to check it out.
All right.
I'll have something to report back. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we should make that a homework assignment for you. Mentor down and do it and tell us what you get.
Well, it's a times two, so I'm not sure I want to do it by myself.
You're Uber. You're okay.
No, I mean, I think I'm going to go 45 on this one and maybe drag maybe a Templar, maybe a Berserker, or sorry, Guardian, and maybe a Dirge with me.
Okay, well, that Templar you find, make sure he knows how to cure first.
Yeah, hopefully this Ice Spire Summit won't require any jousting.
Or paying attention.
Right. Maybe we'll schedule it on a night when there's no what is it, Dancing with the Stars?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
All right, so the three zones that I had were Rivervale, Karnor's Castle, and Icy Keep Retribution.
And mine were Stormhold, Poet's Palace, and Ice Spire Summit.
I do find it a little interesting that each one of us picked one raid zone.
And both of our raid zones have the word ice in the title.
Deep.
Or something. You know, there are a lot of... Actually, that's a funny thing. If you notice, Karnor's Castle and Poet's Palace are sort of parallel in some way. One's a castle, one's a palace.
Now you're stretching.
Stormhold, Rivervale. Both have nine letters.
Okay.
Okay.
This episode also is an Allie Angle episode. So, Allie, are you ready for your question?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Alrighty. As 2010 is now in the history books, it was quite a year for EverQuest 2. Allie, what do you think were the three biggest things from the past year for the world of Norrath?
So my number three item was the change to primary stats for all classes, which happened in February with update 55. Do you remember that?
I do.
The reason this is on my list is because the changes to me make a lot more sense than the old way. Initially, I thought, what? They're going to take this all of a sudden now after 5 years, they're going to turn our whole world upside down. Yeah, looking from the other side now, I actually like it. It makes a lot more sense than it used to make. The classes are what more clearly what they should be, and basically all the gear, everything is more clearly defined.
Yeah, this didn't affect me all that much as a healer. Wisdom was kind of already my primary stat. It still stayed my primary stat. So it didn't affect me all that much. I was a little bummed out about it when I first heard about it, thinking, this is more of that dumbing down type of thing and oversimplifying it to make it easier. So, and I do think that's true a little bit. The world became a little bit less complex, less diverse. You see people more in a funneled into a single solution sometimes. There's not as much variety as there used to be. But the other side of the coin is it makes certain things a lot easier to work towards. You know where you're going and you don't have as many trade-offs. And so I think while that can be bad at times, I think in general it can be a good change.
Well, from the scout perspective, the changes make a lot more sense than the way things used to be. The way things used to be, agility had almost nothing to do with me. I mean, almost nothing to do with anything. I didn't look at agility. I looked at intelligence and I looked at strength. I didn't look at agility. Well, that doesn't make any sense from a scout point of view. Looking back, I'm kind of glad they made the change because, well, it certainly makes getting gear easier. Yes, it's more straightforward. Yes, it's less unique. You know, you're going to see pretty much people wearing the same type of stuff. But you know what? It makes more sense this way, I think, in the end.
Okay, what was your number two?
Well, my number two was having new content throughout the year. We got two new raid zones in May. We got one new high-level instance in October with a challenge mode option. They added rare named spawns to Arudin, Vasty Deep, and whole instances also happened in October. With all the complaining that we do about how we need to have more going on near the end of an expansion, looking back, adding this content throughout the year, I think gives long-term players new challenges to keep people interested. It's very important to keep your long-time players busy. I would say they could have gone even further and added more content, maybe sometime around August, and then maybe adding a little bit more in October. But, you know, I understand this takes a lot of time and effort to do these zones and add that type of stuff to the game. But I think that keeping the vet players happy and busy is probably the number one most important thing that the team can do to keep EQ2 running strong for a long period of time. Yes, of course, new players are important. But if you read over the patch notes from the past year and really read what's been changed, I would say about 80% of it, maybe even more, was geared towards the new player. New high-level content is what keeps vets happy, and it keeps us coming back.
Yeah, I think they did add a lot of good content over this past year, and I think, as you say, that reoccurring content that they keep putting in every game update is great because it keeps us coming back. I do wish game updates came a little closer so that we had that content faster, but as you say, this stuff isn't invented overnight.
Right.
So what was your number one big thing for EverQuest 2 from 2010?
My number one thing is Delmon.
Huh?
And EQ2 Talk. Initially, I didn't want to do this show for a couple of reasons. I prefer being wallpaper. I'm sort of the kind of person who, if I go to a party full of people I don't know, I generally stand in the corner. And the second reason is I feel like I don't really have any comedy. But Del talked me out of it, and or rather into it. And I guess in the end, you know, it was, I thought it would be something fun and interesting to do, something different for me. And it has been so far. And actually, it's a lot of work, but it's been a lot of fun doing the show. And the rewards far outweigh the risks. So Delmon and the EQ2 Talk podcast. Does this surprise you? Okay.
I need a tissue.
Are we mocking?
No, a little, but I have to say it takes me by surprise, and certainly it's been a lot of fun doing the show with you as well. I think we challenge each other very well. I think of the whole Mighty Mugs thing. I would have never stepped outside my shell of arts and crafts to do anything like that without you. So I think, yeah, EQ2 Talk has been a lot of fun for me as well. And I think and I hope that folks really do enjoy what we do. And I know the emails that we get, we love folks to participate with us and challenge us. We don't want to think alike because then I do think the show would be a little bit boring. And I'm glad to hear that you're having fun doing it. And
yeah.
And let me say, putting up with me.
Yeah, I do put up with you, but you put up with me too. I mean, we all have our isms, right?
Some more than others.
Yes. So, but I actually had a runner-up that got bumped off the list for Delmon, if you don't mind me sharing that one.
No, go right ahead. I'm proud I bumped off anything.
Yeah, well, you know what you bumped was the Sentinel's Fate expansion zone art and the cool new mob models that they added with Sentinel's Fate. I had a couple of favorite models
Okay. That
I wanted to just rattle off really quick. The Toxulia Prowler and their skeletal counterpart. You know, the little cat with the tentacles.
Yes.
That sort of...
They're everywhere.
Wiggle above their backs. Yeah, they are everywhere, but they're really, really cool and different looking from what we saw before. And then they have the skeletal version. That's for looks. And the Toxicoid Stormer. I don't know if you know what this mob is, but it's sort of a golem that is basically invisible, and it has these like blue, like Tron looking veins sort of going through it. And you can almost come up on a bunch of them and not realize there are mobs there.
Yes, I ran into many of those in Tox Forest when I was first out there leveling, and then realized that there were many, many mobs on me.
Yeah, I thought that was neat, and they look cool. And then my other favorite one is the Petrified Roper, which is, I think that's what they're called. When the expansion came out, initially you couldn't even target them until you were basically right up on them. And I was totally taken aback when I got attacked by one. I thought it was just a tree. And then it came to life and started beating on me. I thought that was really neat. They have it now where you can actually target it, but you don't see a name until you get close to it.
I had the same experience, absolutely. Didn't know what it was until it was beaten on me.
Yeah, so I thought those were neat, and I liked those models. I give them credit for coming up with new ideas after so many years. And after all of this research for the alley angle, I did want to mention something. I went over all the patch notes from the past year, and I wanted to give a quick mention to my favorite patch note from the year. If that's okay.
Absolutely.
It was from Game Update 58, and this is the patch note. It reads, "The house item versions of the Mysterious Black Tome, Mysterious Red Tome, and Mysterious Green Tome are now actually colored black, red, and green. Mysteriousness levels remain unchanged."
Very nice. Very nice. Gotta say, I like when they have fun with those patch notes.
Me too.
Sometimes, though, I wish there was a little bit more meat in there telling me exactly, but on house items like that, it was pretty clear what they meant by that, that the colors have now been fixed.
I just thought that was very cute. There, every now and then you get a little funny in there. So it's definitely worth reading patch notes.
So to review, your top three things from EverQuest 2 for the year 2010 were number three,
changes to the primary stats for all classes.
And number two,
new content throughout the year.
And the biggest change for 2010.
Delmon and the EQ to Talk show.
Yay, us. So I'm looking at the agenda, and I think we're just about through it.
You survived the spider's email.
I did, and this is, I think, going to turn out to be one of our longest shows ever.
It is, but you know what? We're on vacation right now, so hopefully other people are on vacation, and they will have a little bit of extra time in their schedule to listen. Or you can break us up into pieces. Maybe listen while you're in the bathroom or in the shower.
So let's say thank you to our corporate sponsor for episode number 14, Barks Root Beer. Barks has bite. Root Beer by Barks.
And thanks to our listeners who emailed. We appreciate all the feedback.
And congratulations to the winners of the Mighty Mugs and to the Child's Play charity.
And thanks again to all the folks in the community who supported the Mighty Mug Project.
If you want to email us and talk about any of the things that we've been talking about on the show, you can reach me. I'm Delmon at EQ2Talk.com.
And you can reach me at Allie at EQ2Talk.com.
If you want to get in touch with us in-game, you can reach me. I'm EQ2.unrest.delmon, D-E-L-L-M-O-N.
And I'm EQ2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And don't forget to check us out over on the Facebook. You'll be able to find EQ2Talk there as well. And we do post little snippets of what's been going on in between each show. So I think that's just about everything for episode 15. We wish everyone a very happy and healthy new year. And say goodnight, Allie.
Goodnight, Allie. Kapow! One take. Nice going.
No problem. What was the word that you thought was really funny?
Reach around. I do too because I'm... Yeah. Okay, I hate this recording.
Ah. Allie, are you still there?
Bah!
All right, let me stop this.
Ugh, how do I do this?
Mute yourself.
This recording sucks. Shush yourself in the background. This show is going to be like the epic show from hell.